OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 6. Hey everyone, this is episode number 6 of OWC Radio 2.0. I'm Tim, and thanks a lot for downloading and listening to this episode. I love that music. I really do. You know, OWC Radio is something I really, really love doing, I have to be honest. And this episode is going to be a lot of fun for me. I get to interview, and this is probably, I'm going to say, maybe the fourth or fifth time in my life that I've interviewed this person. His name is Harry McCracken. He's a longtime tech writer. He's been writing about technology in general for like 20 years now. And just recently he left Time.com to restart his self-publication, the Technologizer website. I've been a fan of Harry's work for a number of years now, so anytime I can get him on a podcast and talk to him, I always have a really good time. So I really hope that you enjoy this interview that I've got with Harry coming up in the second half of the show. But first, some happenings in the technology universe. Did you see this new Amazon Fire phone that was is it for sale yet? You know what? As I talk, I'm not sure if you can even buy it yet or if it's just been announced. So as I record, as I want to do, I'm going to go to Amazon's website and see if you can actually buy this thing. I'm not even sure. Let's see. Learn more exclusively at AT&T. It looks like it's, to buy it, please enter your 5-digit zip code. So, okay, it releases on July 25th, so it's not actually for sale yet. Well, it's for sale, you just can't, own it. $199 to start, and that's, of course, with a 2-year warranty for a 32-gigabyte phone. Goes all the way up to 64 gigabytes if you want it completely unlocked. It's $649, at least with Prime. That's a lot of money for a phone. But an iPhone's going to run you the same price, roughly, $199 to $649 for the 32 or 64 gig. I don't know, is there room for an Amazon Fire phone? It's the Fire phone, it's just, I don't know. This sounds weird to me. It sounds, I don't know. I guess it's no more silly than an iPhone, is it? I mean, we're used to the name iPhone, but when that first came out, that was kind of a silly name. I mean, at that point, we'd had the iMac and the iBook and the iPod. And so Apple's going to release a phone, and what are they going to call it, the iPhone? Well, yeah, they did. Then, of course, we've got the iMac. And so, yeah, maybe it's not as silly after all. Fire seems to be the moniker that Amazon's going with. They have the Fire TV. They have the Fire tablets, the Fire phones. I wonder if they have a fire department. Wah, wah. I know. By the way, if there sounds like there's some weird pauses in this video, or I'm sorry, in this podcast, I apologize ahead of time. I've actually got a really bad cold, and I've had it for a week now. It's one of those colds that really kind of creeps up slowly, kind of grabs you and doesn't let go. And when it finally does start to let go, like it has been for the last day or so for me, it's a very, very slow process going down. And the whole sinus, coughing, stuffy, headaches, just, it's not good. And it is what it is. I don't have the greatest sinuses anymore to begin with. And so when I get a cold, it really seems to kind of affect me. And I don't want to cough, while I'm recording the show, so I may have to pause and you may hear those weird breaks, and that's probably what it is. I pause the show so I can cough a little bit and, clear myself up so I can continue to talk. Just a heads up. So yeah, Amazon releases the Fire Phone. It's based on Android. Yet another branch of the Android operating system. And of course, it's completely Amazon-fied, if you will. And I'm a Prime member for Amazon. I like to watch some of the videos that they have, but I don't know. I don't know. It seems to me a little too little, a little too late. It's got this weird 3D thing that I haven't seen one in person, so I can't really say if it's cool or not. I'm not a big fan of 3D. The skeuomorphic thing that the iPhone does, even I find that a little gimmicky, and I don't really see the point other than, oh, look, okay, cool. And, you know, you could take a picture, or you can, it's kind of like Shazamming. You know how, like, with your iPhone, you can Shazam something, a sound, a music, and it will tell you what it is. Well, supposedly with the new Amazon Fire Phone, you take a picture, and it can tell you what it is, and of course, it's all designed around buying that product on Amazon. So, I don't know. It's definitely not for me, but I'm kind of curious if there's any of you listening that seems to think this might be for you. And if there is, why? And definitely let me know. And I'll read your responses right here on OWC Radio. It seems like a weird thing, and I don't get it. But I would love to hear your opinion. Just send an email to owcradio@maxsales.com. Also, and this came out 2 weeks ago, almost pretty much right when I got done recording the last episode, to be honest, which, of course, that usually is the way it works, Apple released a brand new iMac. Usually this is a really big deal. I get really excited. Oh, cool, a new iMac. So, of course, I go up and I read the specs, and I don't get it. Now, number one, it's still over that $1,000 mark. I think the sweet spot for an entry-level computer really is $999 or lower. But this is a $1099, which I guess for the education market, it will knock it lower than $1,000. And I got a feeling that this is kind of where this is geared towards, maybe. Although they're not really advertising that fact yet. But Apple hasn't started their back-to-school promotions yet either, so that could change. But, yeah, it's a brand-new $1099 iMac. OWC got their hands on one, and they did a teardown. Because, hey, if you buy one of these, you should know what it's made out of. What you can do long-term with this machine. Because, let's be honest, a lot of us, me included, buy a machine, and I don't want it just 2 or 3 years. I want to keep it longer than that. And the way I can keep it longer than that is when it starts to feel like it's getting a little bit long in the tooth, boom, I upgrade it. I put some more RAM in it. I put a faster, better hard drive in it, and I'm good to go for another year or two. Well, there's a problem here. This new 1099 iMac only has a 1.4 gigahertz dual-core i5 processor. Now, to be fair, that's probably as much speed as, I'm going to say, 70% of Mac users need. Because from what I've seen firsthand, a lot of Mac users are browsing Facebook. Not too many of them are playing games on their machines. They're browsing the internet. They're watching some movies. They're listening to music. They're connecting their iPhone and transferring pictures over and using iPhoto. None of those things are really dependent on the speed of your processor so much. And even if it is, still a 1.4 gigahertz dual-core i5 is fast enough to do any of that. The problem here, though, to me, with the speed anyways, is for another $200, you can get a 2.7 gigahertz i5 quad-core, which is, to be honest, twice the computer. Same screen size, 21-inch, but you get a much better processor. For $200, I'd be all over that all day long. It's only got a 500 gigabyte hard drive, which, I don't know, to me, doesn't that seem kind of paltry in 2014? A 500 gig hard drive? That seems awful small. And it's not an SSD, by the way. It's a standard, probably a 5200 RPM. I don't know, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the specs for the speed of the hard drive, so I'm ignorant on that. I could go to Apple's website and look it up right now, but I'm not going to. I like to be ignorant. It's got an HD 5000 graphic card, which is meh. And the big drawback for me, though, it's nice that it comes with 8 gigs of RAM. but this RAM is soldered on the motherboard. What's that mean to you and I? That means we can't upgrade the RAM into this thing at all. It's 8 gigabytes, that's it. And, you know, 8 gigabytes might be enough for you if you're just browsing the internet and looking at some pictures and some movies and stuff. But if you want to, in a couple years, take that machine to another level, you really can't. You're stuck at 8 gigabytes. No, I'm sorry, 8 gigabytes. Excuse me. I'm glad that you can upgrade the hard drive. Now, if you went to OWCMaxSales.com and picked up an SSD for this, you're talking about kind of a serious computing machine, but you're still stuck at the 1.4. Honestly, if I'm going to spend the money, I'm going to get the 2.7 i5 quad-core processor at $1,299. I can upgrade the RAM in that. I can upgrade the hard drive to an SSD. And I've got a killer machine for the next 5 years. This entry-level machine, I don't know. I don't know what Apple is shooting for with this machine. I have to be real honest with you. You know what it looks like to me, honestly? It really looks like a MacBook Air in a desktop iMac enclosure. That's what it looks like. Now, like I said, if you go to blog.maxsales.com and look right around June 18th, you'll see a headline on the blog that's "Teardown of Lower Cost 2014 iMac Reveals Soldered Memory." And it's great. They have all the pictures. They start really with the box still sealed. And they have a real nice picture library taking apart the machine and showing you in all of its splendid color, completely torn apart, with all the components removed. So you could see exactly what you're going to get. And honestly, this motherboard with the soldered memory really does, to me, and with a pretty slow processor, it really does, to me, look like a MacBook Air in an iMac body. So I have to be honest, I'm not going to recommend this machine to anybody. Look, if I know someone that's looking for an iMac and they don't have a lot of money, but they still want a new one, the difference between a $1,099 iMac and a $1,299 iMac is night and day. Go with the $1,299 iMac. You have better expandability, a much faster processor. It's a modern machine. This new low-cost iMac, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a machine that would have came out in 2010 from Apple. That's what it reminds me of. To me, this feels like a 3 or 4 year old computer that Apple has re-released. So I don't get it. Again, maybe this is geared more towards the education market, and this is the one that's going to have the special educational pricing and schools will jump all over it. I don't know. But for a consumer, for that much money, for that much money, just get a Mac Mini and an external monitor. You'll save money. The iMac's infinitely more expandable than this thing is, and it takes a smaller footprint. So, yeah, I don't get it. Maybe I'm missing the obvious. If I am, let me know. Maybe I'm completely wrong on this. OWCRadio@maxsales.com. Let me know your thoughts on this. Let me know if I'm right or wrong in your opinion, because I don't get it, and I would love to hear what you have to say. And now for a bit of disturbing news with, I'm going to say, a happy ending. A couple weeks ago, I've been seeing some reports. It was about a week and a half ago. I read an article at Extreme Tech that said, the headline is SSD Shadiness. Kingston and PNY caught bait and switching cheaper components after reviews. So the gist of the story is, and this is the bad part, and I'll get to the good part in a minute. The gist of the story is, these two companies come out with ostensibly budget line SSDs, fairly inexpensive. And when they first were released to the product reviewers out there in the world, they scored extremely high. Quality components, fast, and a really good product review will probably sell more of your products than all the advertising in the world, if it's coming from reputable sources. And these were very reputable websites that did reviews of these SSDs that said, hey, these are good. So people bought them. Well, here's the bait and switch part. At some point, both these companies started using cheaper components or slower components. And yet, they didn't inform the customer that they were doing this. And now that's classic bait and switch. Let me give you an example. Let's say you read a review online about a new car. It's a new Ford Mustang. And you're all excited. Wow, this sounds exactly what I want. And look at the price. It's $20,000 and I get this V6 with a supercharge that delivers 325 horsepower. So you go and you buy it. You get it home and you're driving it and you're thinking, it's not as fast as I thought it would be. You know, it should be this real nice, fast V6 supercharge, 325 horsepower. That's what the sticker says. So you take it to the garage and your mechanic says, oh, no, actually, you got just a plain old 175 horsepower V6. There's no supercharger on here or anything. Would that be fair? I don't think so. In fact, I would say that would probably be illegal, yes? I think that people would be up in arms. Well, that's basically what's happening here. And I don't like that even a little bit. If there's one thing I detest, it's people getting ripped off. And, you know, as someone who's done a lot of product reviews over the last 20 years when it comes to software and hardware, I'll be the first to tell you that when I'm writing my review, I don't write it for the company who sent me the product. I write it towards the person reading the review that's considering spending their hard-earned money on this product. That's who I'm looking out for when I'm doing a product review, whether it's an SSD or it's a game for your iPhone that's free. I'm still looking at it from the end user's perspective. And I'm going to give my honest opinion based on that. So when I see companies doing this, it really does make me mad. It really does. Kingston and PNY. I don't know if that's supposed to be Pony or it's PNY. I've always said PNY. I've never heard it actually pronounced, so I'm just going to say PNY. And this kind of bothered me, to be frank. It really did. Well, OWC, who I do this podcast for, who I've spent money with in the past as a customer, who I, in the past, wrote product reviews on their products. So I've come to OWC from three different places, working for and with OWC on this podcast, now and in the past, as a customer who spent my hard-earned money. I remember when I bought a G3 processor upgrade for an old G3 Mac Pro. Well, it was just called a Macintosh then. It was a G3 tower. And, of course, as a product reviewer, that I was sent a product from OWC, and I reviewed it, and I sent the product back. So I've been dealing with OWC for many, many years. And, of course, now I'm doing OWC Radio, so obviously, when I start hearing about this shadiness with SSDs, I kind of wonder what OWC's take is on this. And I have to say, right now I'm really, really proud to be doing this podcast for a number of reasons, but specifically in this case, on Monday, June 23rd, they released a blog post. And it says, get consistent quality solutions that you could trust with OWC. And I'm going to, and my voice is starting to go a little bit here, so please bear with me. I'm going to read this as it's written. Recently, there has been reports of customers being misled when it comes to which components are installed in the SSDs they have purchased. And, of course, it's linking to the article that I mentioned earlier on Extreme Tech. After such reports, we would like to reiterate that when buying an OWC SSD, you will get precisely what you pay for, the best SSD upgrade for your Mac or PC. At OWC, we're focused on delivering consistent quality solutions with exceptional long-term reliability and real-world performance, said Larry O'Connor, founder and CEO of OWC. We don't have flavors of the month, and customers can absolutely count on us to stand behind our products, which are properly represented both in our specifications as well as reviews where they are covered. We both design and build our SSDs in the USA, with a focus being on the best customer experience, and the better reviews reflect our true real-world benefits, especially for the Mac or the Apple Mac platform. So the CEO, Larry O'Connor himself, is coming out and saying this, which should carry a lot of weight with you. As you can, and you can rest easily knowing that our solid-state drives offer the OWC SSD advantage, meaning our SSDs are engineered for the Mac with no extra software or hacks needed, work perfectly in PCs, maintain peak performance and won't slow down with use, lab-tested for compatibility, speed, and reliability, offer step-by-step install videos for Mac upgrades, receive 24/7 award-winning technical support, offer up to a 5-year warranty, and designed and built in the USA with parts of foreign and domestic origin. And of course, you can go to MacSales.com to check their high-performance SSDs out for yourself. And because of the integrity behind these products that this company has, you can rest assured that there's no bait and switch when it comes to products that you get from Otherworld Computing. What you see and what you read about in reviews is what you get when you buy from OWC. And again, this is a company that I've been dealing with in one capacity or another for close to 2 decades at this point. And integrity, honesty, quality products, a focus on the customer. These are things that I respect so much. And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to do something like OWC Radio. And that's why I'm proud to be associated with this brand and with this company. And you can be assured that with your hard-earned money, money that you had to go out there and make yourself and save maybe and put a little bit back in the cookie jar every paycheck so you can afford to get a RAM and an SSD upgrade for your Mac that's 3 years old, you don't have to worry about a bait and switch type of deal that, oh, I thought I was getting this, but this is what they sent me. And if you do happen to get a product that doesn't work the way it's supposed to, you don't have to worry about, I wasted my money. You haven't. You just pick up the phone and call. You jump on their website and chat, and they will get you the right product every single time. A focus on the customer. No shadiness involved here. Integrity, honesty. That's what OWC is about, and that's why I love doing OWC Radio. I hope that's why you like buying products from OWC. It's a great company. Great people work there. And, I was really happy to see them come out with this statement. Because when other companies do this bait and switch stuff, it kind of gives the whole industry kind of a black eye. People start assuming, I bet everyone's doing that. Well, you know what? I'm here to tell you, everyone is not doing that. And there are still companies out there who respect you as a customer, is going to treat you fairly and honestly. And OWC is one of those companies. So if you hear somebody that needs an SSD upgrade, needs a regular hard drive, needs an external, needs some more RAM, send them over to maxsales.com. They will not be disappointed. And you don't have to worry about, yeah, maybe my aunt is going to get ripped off if I send her to the wrong website. Maybe my friend isn't going to get what they actually ordered. Maybe there's a high rate of return for these products because they're really not very good. You don't have to worry about any of that with Otherworld Computing. So with that, I'm going to jump over to my interview with Harry McCracken. And this, like I said earlier, whenever I get a chance to sit down with Harry and talk, it's always a fun time for me, and I hope you really enjoy it. Make sure you check out his website after this interview. It's the Technologizer website, technologizer.com. That's kind of a weird thing to spell, so if you're not quite sure, simply go to blog.maxsales.com and look for show number 6 of OWC Radio. We'll have a link right to his website from there. Or if you Google it, you know how it will say, did you really mean this? I tell you, when I do that on Google and it kind of autocorrects me, oh, it makes me wish I would have paid more attention in school, maybe. I'm not really good at spelling sometimes, I tell you, because Google is constantly correcting me. Anyways, here's my interview with Harry McCracken. And as I said at the top of the show, we've got a special guest this week. He is Harry McCracken. He's the publisher of the Technologizer website. And I'm glad to be saying that again, Harry. I have to be honest with you. I loved it when you launched the Technologizer publication. I followed you, you know, pretty much since you started that. And I saw you transition that website over as part of Time.com.
I think one of the very first things I did after I started it was talk to you.
Yeah. I could tell you exactly.
That would have been six years ago.
Yeah. And we actually had you here on the OWC radio podcast 4 years ago as well. And but you had already been running the Technologizer at that point for a while. So what happened? You went from becoming an independent publisher to part of a larger organization, and now you're transitioning back. What's going on there? Why that change? And it sounds like it came about because of you, not that they let you go or anything. It sounded like you wanted to go back to the independent publishing.
Yeah, for the last little bit over 2 years, I was on staff at Time, and I had worked with Time before that as sort of an editorial partnership. And I have had an affinity for Time all my life, and
it's a great publication.
Yeah, and I was very excited about the opportunity to work with them, and Technologizer became part of Time.com during the time I was there. And I had a lot of fun, and, you know, I always say about 85% of the things I want to do as a technology journalist I can do on my own, but the last 15% sometimes is really important, and working at Time helped there. I got to interview people like Larry Page and Phil Schiller, and I wrote a cover story for Time magazine, and I continued with my blog, and I had a really good time, but I sort of never, when I went there, expected I would be there for the rest of my life, and I decided that I wanted to try new things, and so I resigned about a month ago.
And you retained the ownership of the Technologizer website?
That's right. I always say that Time borrowed the Technologizer brand, because I didn't sell it to them or anything, but during the time I was there, my content was part of their site, and so when I left, I was able to flip a switch and relaunch my own website, and I put together a new design because a lot of things about blog design had changed since I did the original design back in 2008.
Doesn't look a whole lot different, though. I mean, maybe a little bit more clean.
Yeah, my goal was not that people would say, wow, it looks totally different, although in fact it does kind of look totally different, but I wanted the personality to still be similar.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. You know, I never bookmarked the new site. I always had technologizer.com linked or bookmarked. And that's just where I always went. And I noticed that it was a redirect to Time, and now it's back to the way it was. And I got to say, I'm happy for you, because there's nothing quite like doing it the way you want to do it. But I have to that being said, I mean, your content is still your content, whether it was before the time thing, during or after, it's still your writing.
Yeah, and I should say I had lots of freedom at time. I did all kinds of crazy stories. If I got excited about something and I thought readers would get excited about it, I did it. And so I would say that about 95% of the content I did at time was similar or identical to what I might have done if the site was standalone.
Did they come to you with assignments or suggestions, or did you
sometimes pretty much, yeah? Especially for the magazine. The magazine is done in a much more traditional fashion. And with the magazine, they were really thinking about what a typical Time reader would want to read, which is quite different from the web, where that's one of your concerns on a website like Time.com. But you also want to reach out to new people, and you know, people are going to find you through things like Google News and TechMeme. So the web's a little bit more experimental, and the magazine's a little bit more about putting together the very best article you can for a specific readership.
Now, nowadays, anyways, it seems like all the great magazines are going away. Do you think Time is going to go away eventually, too, as a print publication, or do you think that's still strong?
You know, for decades, Time competed with Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report, and both of those went away, although, strangely enough, Newsweek just came back a few months ago. I mean, when all is said and done, any business you're in, it's best if you're in a category which is strong enough to support several healthy businesses. And newsweeklies are not like that anymore. Time is sort of the last really big one left. But as far as I know, it's doing okay. I think they've done a really good job of figuring out how to keep it a newsweekly, something that makes sense in 2014. And they do a remarkable job of putting it out quickly. When I got there, I discovered that I could be working on a story on Wednesday afternoon, and by Friday morning, we would have printed and distributed 3 million copies of it.
Wow.
Which is, it turns out that for a newsweekly, stuff that happens in the middle of the week is great, because if something happened on Friday, we wouldn't have been able to get it out until a week later, and we, generally speaking, didn't bother. But I did things like when the iPhone 5 was announced, that was announced on a Wednesday morning. And Wednesday afternoon, I wrote that story, and by Friday, we had it out. Of course, with the web, you don't have to worry about that. With the web, you have the flexibility to put stuff out whenever, and with newsweeklies, you don't have that.
All right, I have to ask, what is Upfeedy?
Well, one of the big things that has changed in the last couple of years while I was part of a major media company is headlines on stories have gotten a lot needier, and you see a lot of headlines that oversell stories and say things that will restore your faith in humanity.
Say it's not true. Yeah,
and they say things that are incredible and are remarkable, and sometimes they kind of hide the actual news because they're worried that if they give you what the news is in the headline, you won't bother to read the story. And all of that sort of is difficult for me to deal with because I come from this really traditional background where your goal with the headline is to make it as clear as possible, mm-hmm. and as accurate as possible. And so just for fun, I created a Twitter feed called Upfeedy. And on that, I'm doing the silliest headlines I can. And I'm totally overselling my stories and exaggerating. And that lets me, with the Technologizer feed, doing them the way I want to, which is to be as straightforward as possible.
Is it hard for you to come up with those overblown, overhyped headlines? Because that would be the hardest thing for me.
It's fun. And basically, like, as with a lot of the stuff I'm doing it primarily to entertain myself, and we'll see if it entertains other people as well.
Yeah, I think that's called clickbait nowadays, isn't it?
Yes.
Where the headline clickbait doesn't really match the story.
The Onion just started this great site called Clickhole, which is devoted entirely to stuff like that and is very well done.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about news online. It seems like there's a lot of sites that do it really well, but then there's a lot of sites that don't do it very well, and it's hard to tell the two apart sometimes.
Well, I always say that on the web, there are two ways to succeed. One of them is to do really low-quality content in high volume. So you have lots of page views you can slap ads on. But the other way is to do the best content you can in relatively low volume and to do stuff that's so worthwhile that it sticks out and people notice that and tell their friends about it. And I'm trying to follow that second strategy.
I think it's you're to be commended for that, because honestly, I go to your website probably every other day. And you don't always have something every day, but every other day when I visit your site, there's always something new there.
Yeah, and with this new version of Technologizer, I'm even more than with the earlier one. I don't have content every day. The earlier one, I had several people writing for me.
I was going to ask about that.
At least for now, Technologizer is just me.
Yeah.
And I should say that I'm still sort of figuring out the rest of my life, so Technologizer may not be the only thing I do, but it made me really happy that when I left time, I was able to have a platform right away and have something where people could go and find me.
Yeah, and it was a very smooth transition, too, because it was, you were posting for time, and then it's just the Technologizer again, and there really wasn't any interruption at all.
No, in fact, when I first decided to leave time, I mean, I gave some thought to maybe taking a little bit of time off and resting. And then I realized that the Monday after I left time, on a Friday, WWDC was happening, and that's arguably the biggest news day of the year for technology. And so rather than resting, I left time on Friday, and on Saturday I rebooted the site, so it would be ready on Monday.
So you cover technology as a whole. What are the stories out there that you're kind of following that are, you know, the long tail that you're really keeping an eye on, that's really has your excitement up? Is it what Apple's doing? Is it the Android stuff? Is it what Google's doing in hardware now? What kind of has your interest?
Well, I have a good gig because I get to write about stuff that I care about and I think other people care about. And you just mentioned a bunch of them. I think the platform wars are really exciting because you have Apple, you have the Google platform, you have the Samsung platform, which is sort of a variation on the Google platform. You have the Amazon platform, which is getting more and more important, which is even more of a variation on the Google platform. You have Facebook. You have all kinds of systems. And it's not just a piece of software or a piece of hardware or service. It's hardware, software, service, an app store community. And everybody is trying to dominate there.
I mean, it used to be Mac versus PC. That was
right.
Now it's so much bigger than that. That seems to be small potatoes now.
And you'll notice I didn't mention Microsoft just now, even though Microsoft is also a platform, is actually, even though they have lots of challenges, at least they're going about facing them in a creative way.
Do you worry about them? Do you think they're going to be a significant player over the next 10 years?
I think that's a story which I always avoid making predictions because I'm not very good at making them, and people who do make them tend to be lousy with technology just because so much can happen we don't know about. I mean, I think about what I would do if I was suddenly the CEO of Microsoft, and I can't think of a strategy that's radically better than what they're doing. I think the big question is whether buying Nokia and doing the Surface tablets will make sense, because they went from being a software and service company that provided stuff for other hardware makers to trying to do their own hardware. And so far, at least, there's not a lot of evidence that's going to pay off for them.
I agree, even though I think the new Surface tablets are actually really good. I want to say maybe a microcomputer, because I still don't consider them as a full-blown computer, but by the same token, it's more than just an iPad. So it's in this weird spot. But
right.
It's great. It's great technology. I just don't think they're doing a very good job of selling it. I think if they got the marketing right on that thing, it should sell.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft, really, they've apparently been very confident all along that there's going to be a market for this thing, which is sort of in between an iPad-type tablet and a PC, and does some of the things that both of those do. And I am a little concerned that there's not a huge amount of evidence that that's a huge mass-market product. That was a killer product,
yeah,
Surface would be a huge hit, which is not so far.
Well, you combine that with their flip-flopping on the Xbox One. Oh, this is it's more than just a game system. It's your entertainment system in the living room. It's how you watch TV. It's how you do this. Until just a few weeks ago, well, we're getting rid of this part of it, and it's just going to be a video game system now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was really disappointing, because I think the Xbox One vision is pretty exciting, and it was not the kind of thing that, you know, the world was going to accept in 6 months. It was always going to take a while for it to percolate. And unfortunately, they backtracked a fair amount.
But Microsoft was always good looking at taking the long view.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we get them a little bit here and a little bit here and a little bit here, and before you know it, 2 years down the road, people are hooked into our ecosystem. That's what made Microsoft Microsoft. Microsoft everywhere.
Yeah, that's easier to do when you kind of dominate the most important computing platform like they did for a quarter century.
And they kind of got caught resting on their laurels there for the mid-2000s, I think. They weren't in the places that the industry as a whole was moving. And now they're trying to play catch-up, and I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it. Whereas a company like Apple, who has been around even longer than Microsoft, technically, they're still one of the youngest companies in the Valley when it comes to average age. And their products seem to be, no matter what they do, seem to be extremely hot, extremely popular, if not the most, you know, technologically advanced out there. That they just released a new iMac, which I completely don't understand at all. It's got RAM soldered onto the... It's basically a MacBook Air in a desktop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that kind of a product, but yet it seems Apple can do no wrong. Do you think they're in for a surprise or two here in the coming couple years?
Well, obviously they have one of the biggest challenges any technology company has ever faced, which is mapping out their future without Steve Jobs. And I have to say, there is so much bad commentary about Apple that gets things wrong and says that they're unable to innovate and says that Samsung is a more innovative company that it's possible to sort of fail to see the challenges they do face, because I think when all is said and done, they actually are doing a lot better than most people give them credit for. But that doesn't mean that there aren't scenarios where they could run into trouble. And clearly, Apple has been Apple over the past 15 years because it's identified new platforms and new types of computing devices and has defined them for the rest of the industry. And the last time they did that with the iPad, and they're not really behind schedule, because even when Steve Jobs was around, they only did that every few years.
Yeah, every and 4 to 5 years is when Apple comes out with a major new product.
Right. And so I've always said that you can't really judge how Tim Cook is doing until they get into a new category. And he's not running behind. He's on schedule. And it sounds like maybe by the end of this year, they will actually have entered the wearable category. And it will be reasonable to start judging them on how they're doing entering a new category and whether they managed to come up with something that was as interesting as they would have back in the days when Steve Jobs was still around.
Facebook is the one company that's making odd moves. They bought the Oculus Rift. I'm not sure what to think of Facebook. You know, they came out with a phone a year ago with a lot of fanfare. All the tech websites out there covered it, and nobody in the public ever bought one that I can tell.
Right. It turned out that people didn't really want Facebook to be the interface they deal with on a phone.
No.
And they very quickly moved on to other things. I mean, I think Facebook is pretty good at experimenting and trying things. And typically when they aren't successful pretty quickly, they move on, and they moved on from that.
So what do you think of Amazon's chances of succeeding with a phone that basically puts Amazon front and center, very similar to what Facebook was doing, except this is more about the content itself, not a social media site?
Right. I mean, Amazon is a fascinating company because it's kind of off by itself. Obviously, Android has done well partially because it's taken a lot of ideas from Apple. iOS 8 looks pretty compelling in part because it's taking all these ideas that started at Android.
Yeah.
And Amazon is off on its own, and you know, it's hardwired into its own content and app stores. The two major features in the Fire Phone are this dynamic perspective, which is a sort of a 3D effect, and Firefly, which is a way to take a picture of something with your phone and identify it and do something such as buy it on Amazon or create a music station based on it. Amazon really went out of its way to add features which are its own. And Amazon is at least as secretive as Apple, so we'll never know what its expectations are for the Fire Phone.
Right.
Just as they've never really told us how well the Kindle Fire tablets are. I don't see a scenario in which the Fire Phone sort of becomes the country's most popular phone, but it doesn't necessarily have to, because, like you said, part of the strategy is about selling content to the people who have it.
What do you think the most innovative thing that you've seen over the last few years has been in technology, whether it's mobile, desktop, or even something like the Nest? I mean, what do you think is the most innovative thing that you've seen lately?
I mean, I think the thing I've seen in the last year or so that has the most potential to change everything is something you just mentioned. It's Oculus Rift, because I really think there is a possibility that something along those lines, whether it's Rift or something else, becomes a significant way that we interact with computers. And I'd been reading about Rift for a while and was sort of mildly interested in it. And then when I tried it on, it opened my eyes. And I said, now I understand.
So you're one of the few people in the world that's actually had an Oculus Rift on your head. Can you kind of describe it to the listeners of what that's kind of like? I mean, we're talking about a VR product on an audio podcast, so it's not the easiest thing to do, but
right. And you know, virtual reality has existed for years. In fact, back in the 60s, that's when people started trying to create a helmet that showed you a simulated world. So there's nothing new about the idea. But the thing that's changed in the last few years is there are all these components that were designed for smartphones and tablets that work really well for a helmet. So the Rift is pretty lightweight. It is not horribly uncomfortable. It puts two LCDs in front of your eyes and fuses them together into a 3D image. It does a really good job with motion sensors of reacting as you move your head. So you can look behind you, you can look up, you can look down. You know, for gaming, all of this, it's not hard to understand how this would be important for gaming, but I think there's a potential that it'll change movies. It might change productivity. And like I say, I'm not necessarily predicting that the Rift will be the one that does it.
Yeah, Sony's got one coming as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Rift, could turn out to be something like the Xerox Alto, which was this computer that created the graphical user interface and provided all the inspiration that Apple and Microsoft succeeded with.
Yeah. But by the same token, though, I mean, Xerox didn't get a lot of the PR and the press coverage that this device is getting. Plus, it's owned by a company that doesn't shy away from making big splashy headlines. So, and especially with how much money that they spent for it. And some of the people that are behind it now, I kind of am with you there. I think that I'm more excited about what we could potentially see there. But I do wonder, though, why is this any different than, say, the Google Glass, that everyone seems to have this universal hatred for? And, I mean, it even has its own, you know, negative connotation, you know, glass hole. I didn't say anything naughty there, by the way. Glass, space, hole. I didn't want to put the explicit tag there.
And glass, like Rift, is an interesting thing because so many people have an opinion about it, but relatively few people have used glass or encountered somebody with glass. So a lot of the opinions about glass are also based on people's instincts rather than experience with it. Glass is also, it has the social aspect, which is not as much of a factor with Rift. Because at least for the time being with Rift, you're going to be using it at home. You're going to be tethered to a computer. You might be by yourself in the way that a lot of the time when you're playing a game, you're by yourself. And, and glass by definition is something you wear out and about. And the notion is that the glass is wonderful because you can use it while you're talking to people. And I think the world is still figuring out how it wants to deal with that. I also think, by the way, that it's possible that that wearables like glass eventually will be really important and everybody will have one. My guess is that's not going to be glass in its current form, and it may well not be glass at all, partially because so many of the technical problems have not been worked out, and glass only can run for 3 hours at a time on a battery, which is just not enough for a device you're supposed to wear when you're out and about.
And it has to be tethered.
And chemistry moves way slower than electrons. and they cannot like quadruple the size of the battery because the battery is something you strap to your head.
Right. A lot of problems there, but I think the Rift is something that's, at least for me, I want to play with one. I don't even care what I'm looking at. I just want that immersive feeling. I've never experienced that firsthand, so I'm looking forward to something like that as well.
It's a really neat experience.
What did you get to do with it? Was it a game? Was it just an environment?
I've used it a couple of times. The first time I saw a demo of the game that the folks who do EVE Online are mm-hmm. creating. And they created a game where you're a pilot, because right now, if all you have is a Rift, it's hard to do a simulation of a world where you're running around because you're in one place. And right. they said, okay, so if you're going to be sitting down while you're using Rift, let's do a game where you're sitting down, so we'll make you a pilot, which makes a lot of sense.
Or a lot of games with Professor X.
Right, that would work too.
Yeah.
And then I also talked to some folks at a company called Jaunt who are making equipment for filming live-action movies to be viewed on a Rift. And so they have a camera, which is actually has all these cameras and a 360-degree layout. And I saw the test footage they had put together.
And that was pretty impressive, too?
Again, yeah, it's still kind of a rough draft of an idea. But
it would seem like it would be pretty computer-intensive in that if it's truly immersive and it's HD quality, it's easier to have someone going in a straight line in a game rather than potentially turning around and running the other direction. I mean, that's a lot of computing horsepower that has to spit out to that headset.
That's right. And, you know, there's some pretty compelling things which come to mind, such as doing live sports, which right now you can't do because you have to do all of this number crunching.
Right.
With video footage before you can put it under Rift. But I don't see any reason why eventually using Rift or something like Rift, you couldn't watch a football game and maybe see the same thing that the players see if there are cameras implanted in their helmets.
Now, I know you wear glasses. I have to use reading glasses now. Do they work okay with glasses when you're wearing something like that?
Rift, it's not bad. It's adjustable. There are these kind of straps, and you can adjust the size of the headset. I also have like a weirdly large head, which is an issue with a lot of technology, which involves fastening something to your head. So I have glasses and a large head, which is a worst-case scenario. But you can adjust Rift, and it's not too bad, and I was able to wear it over my glasses.
That's good to know.
Worst-case scenario, it's no worse than watching a 3D movie, and it might even be a little bit better than that.
I would hope so, because I hate 3D movies personally, but I think it was a fad. I think they're starting to go away, thankfully.
Oh, they're totally going away.
Yeah, people are just... I talked to someone that works in a movie theater, and she told me that for every new movie that comes out in 3D and 2D, or just normal movies, it's like 10-1 people are going to the normal movie, even if the 3D costs exactly the same. People just don't like it anymore, so...
And it never really caught on at home.
We'd
all go out and buy 3D yeah. TVs, and we didn't. Now they've moved on to 4K as the next big thing.
Well, that was the thing about the speculation, at least leading up to the Fire Phone from Amazon, was that they had this new 3D technology that maybe that's going to be the future of 3D movies, that you don't have to put something on your head. It's just you're watching it and you get this 3D effect. What do you think about something like that?
The one form of 3D I've seen that I actually found pretty compelling is a technology that Dolby has for glasses-free 3D on a TV set. And it's not 100% perfect, but it's really not bad. I found the 3D about as good as a lot of the 3D I've seen that requires glasses. And it's not one of the challenges they have is there's not an enormous amount of depth of field with their technology, but that's almost a good thing because it makes it feel a little bit less gimmicky.
Yeah.
They started showing this, I think, year before last, and as far as I know, they have not announced any actual sets.
Yeah, 3D the big thing at, maybe two or three CESs ago, and then it just, I followed all the coverage for CES this year, and there was almost no talk of 3D at all.
Right, it kind of came and went, but this Dolby technology, if they ever get it out there, is surprisingly good. And I'm not a 3D fan either, but I found it pretty impressive.
Last thing I want to talk to you about before I let you run here, Harry, what's the oldest piece of technology in your house that is one of your favorites, and why?
That's easy. I got a couple of years ago, I did a story on Polaroid cameras, and I got very interested into Polaroid and the fact that even though the company essentially doesn't exist anymore as a technology company, people still love Polaroids, and people are still taking pictures with Polaroid cameras. And I had a lot of fun with the story, and as part of my research, I bought about half a dozen Polaroid cameras, and I'm still using them.
I actually read your story about that. And there's a whole secondary market when it comes to Polaroid mm-hmm. cameras and film now, which
yes,
I found fascinating. I had no idea that it was... It's almost kind of like the same thing that's going on with records now, with LPs.
Yes.
That it's kind of making a comeback in a time where it makes no sense for that to make a comeback at all. And the same thing with Polaroid. I mean, everybody has a super high-resolution phone camera in your pocket at all times, but yet, somehow, people are really getting into Polaroids.
People are very into it. And even, even folks who were not alive during the heyday of Polaroid, which is really the 70s.
Yep.
That's when they reached their peak, have an emotional attachment to it. And everywhere you go, you see digital images that are in a frame with a border that looks like a Polaroid picture. That frame of the Polaroid picture is kind of iconic. And I think there are probably people who see that and like it and may not even understand that it's based on Polaroid technology.
You and I are very similar in ages, so you probably have the memories of the 70s at holiday events, family events, where you'd have a coffee table with the four or five Polaroids sitting there kind of developing.
Yes.
Waiting for, and people would kind of flip them like a fan and blowing on them, trying to get it to develop a little bit faster, which I don't think actually did anything, but it made people
right.
feel good.
Yeah, in theory, shaking it helps, and yeah. in fact, it doesn't.
It doesn't do anything. I think it's really I like the fact that we live in a time where a whole new generation is kind of experiencing, from a whole different perspective, technologies that we enjoyed growing up. I mean, retro gaming is very, very big right now. Mm-hmm. People are spending a lot of money on old consoles as well as building their own kind of MAME cabinets and stuff like that. Polaroids are making a big comeback, even though Kodak itself is pretty much gone. LPs are... I mean, I was at a record store in a mall, a record store. I couldn't believe it. I had to go in just to look because I felt like I was in 1978 again. It was crazy. So it's kind of neat that you're covering all of this stuff for a technology website, and you can kind of go to your own past to kind of give it that perspective as well.
And people really read it.
Yeah, they absolutely do.
If nobody was reading it, I wouldn't bother doing that, but some of that stuff is really popular.
Right. So where could people go online to learn more about you and to find you online, Harry?
Well, you can check out technologizer.com. And in terms of social networks, the main place I hang out is Twitter. And I'm Harry McCracken there.
And you're on Facebook as for friends, or can people follow you on Facebook as well?
Facebook is cool, too. I'm Harry McCracken there as well.
I will also put
links. Also on Google Plus, although I don't spend as much time there as I should, probably.
Yeah, I don't know about Google Plus. You know, I signed up for it right away when it first came out, but I don't get it. It seems like a dumbed-down version of both Facebook and Twitter. It doesn't do either one of those things as well. It's kind of its own thing, but honestly, Harry, it feels like it's only the techno elite that kind of hang out there. None of my Facebook friends are on there.
I know some people who just love Google Plus. I always say that it's very hard to judge social networks because the experience I have might be radically different than the one you have on the same network. And of course, you can't really complain about Google Plus unless you make some effort to hang out there and do stuff, because if you just lurk, it's not going to be compelling.
Yeah, that's probably my problem. I'm just
and
lurking.
I've sort of been lurking there. The best thing about Google Plus is the photo features are really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those websites that I keep meaning to put more time into. Yeah, I just can't be bothered most of the time.
I think generally speaking, you know, a lot of people have enough time to focus on one social network, If they're lucky, they have enough time for two.
And that's going to be Facebook and Twitter.
Most people are not going to do three of them.
No.
And so it's a challenge for Google Plus just because Facebook and Twitter are so well entrenched.
Technologizer.com is the website. I suggest you guys bookmark it and hit that website often. You'll find some of the best content when it comes to writing, not just tech writing, because there's times that you write about other things as well. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of your writing. Hopefully, you'll continue for a long time. And if you do go into another venture, please come back on the show and let us know here on OWC Radio. I'd appreciate it. And I will also put links at for the show notes for OWC Radio, episode number 6, to all the places that you can find Harry. Harry, thanks a lot for coming on OWC Radio this week.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Once again, I want to thank Harry McCracken for the interview, and I want to remind listeners to check out our website, Otherworld Computing, at maxsales.com, www.maxsales.com. And if you want to find any links or anything that we talked about here on the show, it's blog.maxsales.com, and simply look for OWC Radio, and I would love to hear feedback from anybody and everybody on any subject. Got a question about your Mac that you can't seem to find an answer to on the internet? Let us know. I'll find an answer for you. We've got some brilliant engineers at OWC, and I'm sure somebody will find an answer to your problem. Simply send your email to owcradio@maxsales.com, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.